Today for our Friday Forum webinar, we are very excited to welcome back Christy Mims with Ready to Quit, 3 Steps to Find a Job You Love.
As Liz said, we're talking about Ready to Quit, 3 Steps to Find a Job You Love today. So as we wait for people to kind of grab their lunch, if you're on the East Coast, or grab your second cup of coffee if you're on the West Coast, or dinner if you're somewhere else, feel free to chat in and tell me, where are you watching the webinar from today? I myself am in California right now. So I just got my second cup of tea and I'm feeling very caffeinated. So I want to welcome everyone. And as you settle in, I have what I consider the most awkward first date question. So tell me this. When you think about quitting your job and doing work that you love, how will quitting your job change your life? So I have one more question for you as we get started. Put a price on it. You know, we've talked about work-life balance, matching your passion, more money, less stress, more free time, new interests. What is that worth? What is that worth to you? So put a price on that. It's worth $100,000. It's worth $1 million. $50,000. Work you love is worth $50,000. At least 50,000, a lot of 50,000s coming in, 150. Yeah, I think we can agree that it's worth a lot. So the reason I bring this up is because it's worth so much. That's awesome. That means you'll give me your attention then, since that is what we're going to be talking about today, how to help you quit your job to find work that you love. So with that, I want to go ahead and dive into our agenda and talk about what we're going to cover today. The first thing we're going to talk about is the big mistake you're probably making right now. Then we're going to tackle 3 steps you need to take to find your passion now so you can fire your job without the stress, because I know for many of you who are feeling stuck in your jobs right now that it's terrifying to think about what you'll do next and it's super stressful. I want to talk about what to say to get people to want to help you with your career. And of course, at the end, I'm going to take whatever questions you throw at me and share additional resources that I think might be helpful beyond the time we have here together. And I'm a certified career coach. So if there is something you want to ask me, by all means, it doesn't have to be related to this topic. So I just want to know that I'm here to help in any way that I can. All right. Is everyone ready? Okay. So here's the big mistake. Let's talk about it. The big mistake is this. Most people believe that when you're unhappy at work, you should immediately start the job search. That seems fairly reasonable, right? If you're unhappy at your current job, clearly a new one would solve the problem. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that you will have 11 jobs in your lifetime. So if you thought, hey, I need a new job, let me change jobs, you're not alone. This is the US Bureau of Labor Statistics, of course. So it's pretty common to change jobs. 11 jobs is quite a fair amount. And yet, 2/3 of people are unhappy at work. That's what the good people at Gallup tell us. That's also what Manpower tells us. That's what Deloitte tells us. That's what basically every survey out there tells us. The majority of people are unhappy at work. So clearly, just changing jobs isn't the solution. If changing jobs was the solution, you would be happier at work. People would figure this out. The majority of us wouldn't be happy. That can't be the right answer. So if you want to fire your job and find fulfilling work, work that's worth $50,000, work that's worth $1 million, work that's worth $150,000, whatever you put your price on it, then you've got to know what will make you happy first. You've got to know what kind of work will make you happy first. Otherwise, what you're doing is what I like to call the spaghetti effect. What you're doing, if you say, I'm unhappy here, let me just quickly find a new job, you're just throwing your career up against a wall the same way you'd throw spaghetti against a wall, hoping that something will stick, that you'll just randomly luck into a job that you like, that you'll find something that'll make you want to get up and go to work in the morning. And, you know, you're just hoping that you've cooked your spaghetti long enough. Is anyone guilty of doing this? Is anyone guilty of just hoping it'll work out? If they can just change jobs, they'll figure it out. I share this to say that if you're guilty of this, you're not alone. So many people do it, right? We've just looked at the numbers. Almost everyone does this, but that's not the right way to do it. So we've talked about, if you want to find work you love, you've got to know what it is that you love first before you get up there and start changing jobs. But you might be asking, Christy, how do you figure it out? So that's what I want to talk about. So you figure it out by finding your passion, by finding that thing that really fuels you, by finding something that's going to give you a sense of meaning, and then you start to figure out the work that's going to satisfy that. So have any of you watching right now ever paid lip service to finding your passion? Have you talked about, oh yeah, I really should figure out what I want to do, or I need to, you know, figure out what I want to be when I grow up, even though I'm already 35, you know, whatever it is. I get that, you guys. It's so much easier to talk about finding your passion than to actually do it. I understand that, but I really want to make the case for why finding your passion is 100% worth it and why it's time to stop paying lip service to doing this. This is stuff that you know, but I want to underscore this. It's better for your health to do work that you like. I'm a career coach. I've been a full-time career coach for almost 6 years. I have lost count of the number of people who have emailed me about their cancer brought on by their stress, who have emailed me about their anxiety and depression brought on by their work, who have emailed me about what's going on in their health that they can't get out of bed because their work is dragging them down. I have lost count, you guys, and I get angry. You can hear the emotion in my voice right now because it makes me angry that so many people are in work that actually impacts their health in a detrimental way. Not just low-level stress and anxiety, we all feel that, but critical health problems that arise from doing work that just drags you down. So doing work that you genuinely like and is genuinely meaningful is not, I mean, it's not just good for your, you know, weight and your mental game and all that other stuff. It can literally, in some cases, save your life. And we don't talk about this, but it's you know, frankly, it's time that we do. It's time that we be honest about this, that this is important. This is your health. This is a big deal. It's also really good for your confidence, doing work that you love. We've all been in jobs where we felt belittled, or we felt like it's not a good match for our skill set, or we felt like we're just doing yet another PowerPoint presentation that no one's going to watch or listen to or read, and so it's pointless. And this just kills your confidence. It kills your self-esteem. And if that's the majority of your day, and let's be honest, you spend the majority of your day at work between your commute, your day in your office, your commute home, the stress, you check an email at night. We all know this. So it's really bad. It's bad to feel like a lesser version of yourself. It's bad to feel like you don't have what it takes. It's bad to feel like you're not doing anything worthwhile. That really drags you down. And this is something else we don't talk about, and we need to. Things have changed in our work environments. It's not 20 years ago. It's not 30 years ago. Right now, people are looking for the passionate. Companies, and we're talking about especially jobs that pay well, skills that are valued are innovation, creativity, communication, collaboration, and focus. These are some of the top most valued skills. The thing is, employers have figured out that they can teach you the job, they can teach you the basics, but they can't teach you to be innovative, they can't teach you to be creative. You have to bring that on your own. But that's really hard to do if you hate your work. It's really, really hard to do. So people who are more likely to have these skills that companies are looking for today and to get the promotions and the salaries that come with them are the ones that are passionate, are the ones that feel connected, are the ones who are excited in the morning when they think about work, who come home at night and kind of are satisfied by what they did that day. These are the people who get the monetary rewards at work. So this is another reason why paying lip service to passion is shooting you in the foot, because it's actually impacting your bottom line. So let me ask you this, if passion is so great, I hope I've just made the case for why we should move on from paying lip service to it. Why aren't we all working to find it? Because it's freaking hard. It's not easy, right? And so I want to ask you this, why, and you're already elaborating, so continue. What do you think makes finding your passion so hard? So I want to spend a second and talk about why passion is so hard, because I think this is really, really important. But there's something that we haven't really talked about that much, that only one or two people mentioned, and it's this. Did you study Passion 101 in high school? Or at UVA, did you take Careers 3 or 4? You know? Did you take Passion 205? My guess is no, you didn't. Exactly. So here's the thing. The reason number one why finding your passion is so hard, if we really break it down, and I want to unpack this because if you can understand this, you can move past it and you can start to really work on your passion. Reason number one why finding your passion is so hard is you were never taught how to do it. You were never taught how to do it. And you this is a really, really big deal. And I want to underscore this. Because if you're never taught how to do it, most of us don't intuitively know. So therefore, we're left throwing spaghetti against a wall, hoping it all works out. So I just want to say, if you're struggling with passion and you have some worry or you have some anxiety or you have some secret shame, oh my gosh, I can't believe I haven't figured this out. I'm smart. I went to UVA. Why haven't I figured this out? I want to just invite you to take a deep breath. It's not your fault. No one ever taught you how to do it. So here's my next question. When you think about finding your passion or even finding a new career, what happens in your body? So take a second and think about it and just tell me what's going on in your body right now. How are you feeling when you see this question come up on your screen? Or when I say, why don't you just quit your job and find a new career? When you think about finding a new job or a new career, that triggers a fight or flight response because it's really going to something that challenges your very survival. Your job is how you pay for your shelter. It's how you buy your food. And that's a very visceral core thing that we as humans are wired to need and to want. So when you even think about messing with that, even if it's for a better opportunity, it can often trigger a nasty response, as you've all just shared. And you come up with a lot of self-doubt on top of it. What if I fail? What if I can't figure this out? What if this crappy job that I hate is all there is? What if there's nothing else out there for me? So has anyone ever asked these questions of themselves? So I also want to say part of the reason why finding your passion is so hard is because your very biology is fighting against you. And this is something else we don't talk about that often, but it is true for all the reasons I just said. You know, it's going back to how you get food, how you get shelter. It's a very visceral thing. And it's really hard to overcome because we're designed to not want to rock the boat, especially when rocking the boat might involve our survival. So reason number two why finding your passion is so hard is it's because you're a human. You're a human. It's just it. It's just hard. It just is. So last question. How many of you have gotten a less than supportive response from friends or family when you've talked about maybe trying to find more meaningful work or make a bigger career change or just even look for something different? Has anyone shared that or shared an idea like, oh, I'm thinking about pursuing a career in writing or pursuing a career doing something different, and your friends and family are like, are you crazy? Or what are you thinking? Or I don't know about that. And have you ever felt like your friends and family, sometimes you'll share an idea that you have and then they start pushing their ideas onto you? Has anyone experienced that? Like, oh yeah, you want to become a writer? That's awesome. But have you thought about being an accountant? That's so stable. Yeah, so this is pretty common too. So reason number three why finding your passion is so hard is because often helpful friends and family make it hard to stay motivated. Many times their questioning of you is coming from a place where they're trying to be helpful. They genuinely want the best for you, but in many cases they want what they think is best based on their own experiences and their own lives. The problem is they don't go and do your job for you. Only you do that. So it's tough when you have to live someone else's expectations in your day-to-day life. And it's really tough when you're fighting yourself, you're fighting your lack of learning, your biology, and then you have to fight your friends and family's expectations or advice. That's really, really tough. So it's enough to make you want to give up already. And so if you felt that, I want you to know that it's okay. We've all been there, but that's why we're here today. So let us tackle how to do it differently. But first, I want to just, if you haven't seen me before, this is me. Hi. If you felt like you want to give up already, I want to just tell you, I get it. I understand. This is how I felt for years when I was working in Washington, D.C. as a consultant. And a few years ago, I was taking photos for my website, and I was telling the photographer my story, and he said, wow, how did your work used to make you feel? And this is the picture he captured. This is how my job used to make me feel. Not because I didn't work with great people, I did. Not because I wasn't well paid, I was. It's just, man, it just wasn't work that I wanted to do. It wasn't meaningful, and I was more and more miserable and unhappy. I stopped sleeping. I stopped feeling like I was doing anything with my life. It was super stressful. So I want you to know that you are not alone. And I think this conversation to the point that we've reached today, you've seen that, and everyone else has been chatting in. So thank you for your honesty and for your sharing. But I also want you to know that there is hope. So when the photographer asked me, how do you feel now about your work? This is the picture he captured. And the reason I'm sharing this is I think the conversation has shifted for the better for most of us. I think 20 or 30 years ago, we couldn't talk about the fact that we wanted to do meaningful work that we also enjoyed. We couldn't talk about the fact that it's okay to want to be paid for work that you love. We couldn't talk about wanting to have a flexible schedule or wanting to have more work-life balance. That wasn't the kind of thing that was a comfortable conversation. But I think today it's becoming more and more common to say, you know what? I can do good work. I can do meaningful work. I can do work that has an impact, and I'm allowed to enjoy it and make a living wage. And that's a conversation that's becoming more and more mainstream. And I've seen it happen again and again. So I'm here to say that it is possible that, you know, I've found work that I love. I've helped my clients find work that they love. And I see it as something that more and more companies are even supporting in how they structure their benefits package and how they structure their continuing education and things like that, that this is something that's totally possible. You can figure this out. And I also see it, and I feel fortunate to have been able to share this message on a lot of different spaces. These are some of the places where I've been able to, you know, put the message out there. And so it's one that I think is growing and growing and growing. So I just want to say that if this is you, if you want more, if you want more meaning, if you want more passion, it's okay. It's allowed. It's happening. And it's part of our culture today. So now I want to dive into what is up for you for the next 30 days. How are we going to get you into a place to be ready to quit your job and figure out what you want to do for your passion? So if you haven't been taking notes already, now's a great time to start. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk through this four-phase approach. This is the way that I always like to teach this. We're going to do it rapidly because we only have a certain amount of time together left. Normally this will unfold, just expect this to unfold over days, weeks, and months, not just a half an hour. But we're going to overcome your biology. We're going to help you discover your passion. We're going to build your community. And then that's ultimately what leapfrogs you forward into a new career, something that's more meaningful for you. So this is the process we're going to take and the process I recommend you use once this webinar is over. And so I'm going to give you some specific actions to do today, tomorrow, and for the next 30 days that I want you to really take to heart to jumpstart this process. Oh yeah, I am all about practicality. So what we just talked about, there's a visceral response anytime you think about changing jobs or changing careers, which slows you down and keeps you stuck. So the very first thing that we have to do is we really need to overcome your biology, because if we don't do that, it's unlikely we're going to make a significant amount of progress. So the very first thing that I want you to remember and write down and keep in mind and tattoo on your forehead is that fact trumps fear. Fact trumps fear. So let me explain how to put the facts together so that you can overcome some of these knee-jerk responses and worries about failure and worries about what's going to happen next and everything else that's going to come up for you. So the very first thing I want you to do is to take a deep breath. Now, this seems super simple. You all know the power of breathing, but it's a reminder that when you breathe, not only are you slowing down that fight or flight response, you're sort of breaking that pattern of behavior, but you're also oxygenating your brain, which makes you smarter. So what happens when you trigger your fight or flight response is your focus narrows on trying to identify the problem and then getting out of the way. That's how we respond. Like the cave bear attacks you, he triggers that fight or flight response, and you're like, let me get out of the way of the cave bear. But what that does, unfortunately, is it means that you're only focused on a very tactical thing. You're not focused on the bigger picture. When we want you to find your passion, we need you focused on the bigger picture. We need you to be able to think expansively and with creatively and without fear. So the very first thing to do is just take a deep breath, become a little smarter, and slow the fight or flight response down. But that's just baby step zero. What I really want you to focus on once you've taken that deep breath is this. When someone says to you, you can't do this, or that's a crazy idea, or what are you thinking? Or you say to yourself, I can't do this, or oh my gosh, what if I fail? Or what if this doesn't work out for me? Or what if I never figure this out? When you have those thoughts, this is what I want you to do. I want you to ask this of the person who's either telling you you can't do something, or I want you to ask this of yourself. I want you to say, how do you know? Not how do you know, but with curiosity, how do you know? You said I can't become a writer. How do you know? You said I should keep my, you said, you know, starting a business won't work out. How do you know? If you're telling yourself, I'm totally going to fail at this, there's no way I'll succeed, I want you to ask, how do you know? And the reason for this is that question will start to dig into what's really going on and it'll start to bring up facts. So I want you to keep asking this question until you really uncover the facts of why this person is telling you you won't succeed or why you're telling yourself. Because here's the truth. Most of the time, you're getting bad information either from someone else around you or from your own fears and doubts, from your own biology. That's just that knee-jerk fight or flight response. So it's just bad information that's keeping you stuck. But if you start to uncover real facts, then you can make an informed decision about what the real possibility and opportunity is there for you and move forward. You're going to open up a lot more potential in your career and in your path. So here are some of the things you might hear. Everyone knows you can't make a living as a travel writer. Everyone knows I can't change careers after a certain age. These are some of the things you might be telling yourself. And I want you to ask, how do you know? How do you know? Tell me how you learned. What paper did you read? What experience did you have that made you think that I can't do this? So I bring this up because your life can literally change by asking this question, and I want to tell you a quick story. So back in the day, I was a consultant, as I mentioned earlier, and I was in DC and I was miserable. We've talked about this, and I knew I needed to do something else. And I finally realized after doing some research, after doing some hard work on myself, that I thought that coaching was what I really wanted to do. And I really thought about coaching people in their careers because I've always had a passion for that. I was, you know, the youngest principal in my business unit. I was one of the youngest directors. I ran a $30 million portfolio. I had a huge team. So I did a lot of training of my staff. I did a lot of hiring. I thought about it a lot, and I was really passionate about helping people with their careers. So I talked to my boss, who was a really brilliant woman, and I really respected her. And she was also a certified coach. She'd gotten certified as a complement to her consulting. And I said to her, hey, you know, I've achieved so much very quickly at this firm, but I don't think that this is the path I want to be on for the rest of my life. And I'd like to explore coaching. I have a real call around this. What do you think? Should I take a coaching certification course? Is there a future in this for me? And she said, you should absolutely get certified as a coach. It's a wonderful thing to do. But if you think you're going to be able to quit your job and be a coach full time, you're wrong. The market is oversaturated and you'll never be able to do it. And that was the biggest bucket of cold water I've ever felt. And I was really shocked because she's a super supportive person. And I was just shocked that that was her take. And in that moment, I had a choice. I could have just accepted her opinion because I very much valued it. And she was someone who I admired and respected and stopped. Or I could have asked, how do you know? In that moment, I was too dumbstruck to ask her, how do you know? But I did walk away and take a deep breath, and I asked myself, how does she know this? She's never been a full-time coach. She just got certified to be, you know, to go along with the consulting, which is great, but she's never run a business. She's never been a coach. How does she know? So in that moment, I asked myself that question, and I said, you know, I need more facts. So I went out and I talked to other coaches. I used my network. I contacted some other coaches who were working full-time in Washington, D.C., and I invited them to lunch and coffee, and I met up with as many as I could. And I asked them, you know, is this possible? Can I do this? And they said, absolutely. It's absolutely possible. It's crazy someone told you it's not possible. You know, all of us are doing it. Of course it's possible. It's not easy, but it is possible. You can totally do this if you want it badly enough. And by hearing them say that to me, and by questioning and getting the facts and talking to people and doing more research, that changed the path of my career entirely. I encourage you always. Always, whenever you're feeling doubtful, you're telling yourself you can't, whenever someone else is telling you you can't, ask how do you know and keep digging until you get facts, real facts, not fears, not assumptions, not so-and-so's uncle, brother once did this and they didn't do it successfully, so neither will you, but real hard facts, and then you decide. So that's the very first step. That's how you overcome your biology. So for the next 30 days, my challenge to you is anytime you feel fear or doubt about your career change, about quitting, about finding a job that you love, and you're telling yourself you can't do it, or it's not a good path, or you'll never make money, you have to ask, how do you know? And then do the research. So that is your first mission in the next 30 days. Everyone ready? Let's talk about passion learning. How do you figure out what your passion is? What is it that's going to make you feel like you're doing something that's meaningful, not just to you, but to the people around you, the work that matters, right? So how do we figure this out? And the truth is, we cannot figure it out over this webinar. It does take more work than this, but I can tell you the steps that I want you to take to figure it out in the next few days, weeks, and months. So the first thing that I want you to do is I want you to treat learning about passion the same way you would learn about any other hugely important life skill. So hugely important life skill. So let me ask you this. What was the last really big skill that you learned? So think on that for a second. If you feel comfortable sharing it, go ahead and chat it in. But what was the really big life skill or skill that you learned? It doesn't have to be career related, by the way. It can be anything. So as you're thinking about the last skill that you learned, I want you to tell me or write it down. How did you learn it? What did you do to learn that skill? Did you read a book? Did you sign up for a program? Did you get into some sort of class or course? What did you do? Did you just practice a lot? And I want you to think about how you best learn right now. And I want you to be honest with yourself and not aspirational. So what I mean by that is this. When I think about learning the skill of fitness, I often default into the idea that if I pay a gym money, I will magically become fit, right? As long as I've paid money and thought about it, fitness will happen. But we all know that's not the truth. And I personally am not disciplined enough to do fitness on my own. I know when I'm really honest with myself and I'm not aspirational, when I'm brutally honest, I know that sadly I am not disciplined, and therefore I learn best when I learn one-on-one with an instructor or in a small group or community, but I need to be personal and I need to be interactive. That's my style of learning for really important things. I know that about myself when I'm not being aspirational, when I'm being honest. So I want you to think about that too. When you think about how you best learned and the last big skill you learned, I want you to be really honest with yourself and not aspirational. And that's how I want you to approach passion. That's how I want you to approach learning about passion, because it is a skill that you can learn. It is learning how to figure this stuff out is something I teach. It's millions of people have written about this. There are endless blogs, programs, courses, other things out there. And so based on how you learn, I want you to commit to either, if you learn and you're very self-disciplined and you learn by reading, then buy a book on passion. If you learn by doing or by having an instructor, get into a class or a comprehensive program. There's a million ways to do this and to figure this out. And the point that I want to make here is your career is worth literally millions of dollars over your lifetime. You're going to work for 50 years. That's the latest data coming out, is that you will be employed for 50 years of your life. So that's why I say your career is worth millions of dollars. So if you're not willing to spend 10 bucks on it, or 30 bucks, or a couple hundred bucks, or even $1,000 on it to help you figure out what that's meaningful, that's pretty short-sighted. And so you can tell I'm pretty blunt, but I'm going to be honest here. Figure out the way that you learn, invest your time and invest your money in finding work that you love, because it's literally going to pay off. And ultimately, when I say this, I view it as an investment in yourself. You know, I did the math, back of the napkin math a couple years ago. You spend about 3,000 hours a year either at work, thinking about work, commuting to work, or feeling stressed about work. That's a lot of time. If you add that up over the course of your lifetime, that's many, many hours. So it's worth an investment of time and effort and money, even though I know it's hard and we've talked about all the reasons why, to figure out what it is that you love and to go and do it. It literally pays off. And the reason why a lot of times you fail is because you aren't honest about what you need to learn. You say, I really want to find my passion, and you pick up a book, but you aren't honest about the fact that that's not how you best learn. And that's not how you best get support for really big skills. So the message that I want to have here is, whatever you choose to do to learn how to find your passion is great, but just pick something that that truly works for you. Don't pick a modality that's not going to support your learning style, because I want you to figure out work that you love so you can have an impact on others. I think it's amazing when you do work that you love and you get to enact change, even if it's the smallest level. It's really, really powerful. So be honest with yourself and get the support that you need. All right, here's the next piece of finding your passion. And by the way, to back up, your homework on that piece for the next 30 days is to figure out something that's going to help you learn how to find your passion. So learn the skill of doing it and sign up for that, or buy that book, or whatever supports your modality. So over the next 30 days, find something and invest your time. And the question is, what books, classes do you recommend? I have a resource for you at the end, so we'll talk about that. That's a good question. Next step, let's talk about building your community. Okay, so you know, we talk about it's not what you know, it's who you know. Of course, humans, we're social creatures. We're socially wired to exist in communities, back to our biology, and we group source knowledge all the time. So anytime you ask for a restaurant recommendation on Facebook, or you know, a plumber recommendation, or you post a job posting, whatever it is, this is the way our culture and society works. It works through others. And so building the right community around you right now will help make your dreams a reality down the road. So we've already identified earlier why having the right people around you is so important. You know, it's not just because the wrong people will tear down your dreams and make it hard to find your passion, but it's also because the people will help you. They'll either mentally cheer you on and provide you some of that mental support, or they'll make a connection. You know, you say, hey, I want to become a travel writer. And someone in your network might say, I know someone who does that. Would you like me to introduce you? Or they'll refer you to a job opening or direct you to an interesting company or nonprofit that's doing something that really is going to resonate with what you think you want to do. So having the right community around you is so important. So here's what I want you to do right now in this moment. I want you to identify one person who really inspires you. So it could be anyone, but I want you to think in this moment, one person who really inspires you. Maybe it's a blogger or someone in your immediate community, someone at work, in life, at church. It could be anywhere. It doesn't matter. So it could be someone you know or someone you just know over the internet. And I want you to write down their name right now. So please, and you're welcome, by the way, to chat it in too if you want. That's totally fine. Or if it's something personal and you just want to write it down, please go ahead and write down their name right now. The next thing I want you to do, now that you've identified who they are, if it's someone that you know or you can connect with in person, I want you to invite them to coffee. And by the way, if it's like Oprah or someone else, I'll explain what to do in a second. But if it's someone that you can connect with in person, I want you to invite them to coffee. Treat them, spend that $3, and it's because it's a good investment in yourself. And all I want you to do is talk to them about what they are up to. I want you to allow yourself to be inspired by someone else's passion and excitement and motivation. Sometimes that's enough to trigger a great catalyst of ideas for what's next for you. Sometimes that's enough to trigger a connection or a more meaningful conversation. But right now, I don't want you to ask them anything, but what they're working, just talk about what they're working on and why they're excited and get to know them. And all your only mission is to allow yourself to be inspired. Here's how to contact them. I want you to follow this four-step formula. So the first thing, if there's someone that's a good friend and you don't need, you know, then obviously you don't need to do this. If it's someone you don't know well or you haven't met before, you can take this formula and use it. So the first thing when you reach out is use sincere flattery and or a common connection or both. People love flattery. Everyone listens when flattery is sincere and it just warms someone up to you. We also like to feel that we have a connection. So if you have something in common or if you have a friend in common or something like that, use that. Then introduce yourself and your ask is to have coffee for 20 minutes and just chat with them about what they're up to. Then make it easy to say yes. So don't say, I'd love to have coffee sometime. Say, I'd love to have coffee. I'm free every Friday for the next month. Name a time and a place. You know, make it easy for them to say yes. Don't make it a hassle for them to have to write back and say, when would you like to have coffee? I'm free on Tuesdays. You have to say, oh, I'm not free on Tuesdays. What about Thursdays? That's a pain. You're making it hard. Make it easy. And then just put a simple close. Thank you so much for your time. I'm really looking forward to this. Sincerely, whatever feels like your style. So it's a four-part thing. Open with sincere flattery and a common connection or both things. Introduce yourself in your ask to have coffee. Make it easy to say yes, and then just close. So here's an example. This is not, I'm going to show you a real example and a non-real example. This is something I drafted based on some of the fun emails that I get. So you might write to someone, "Dear Abby, Jackie Collins and I went to school together and she told me about the work that you're doing with romance fiction." So that first sentence establishes a connection. You have a friend in common. "I've since read everything you've ever published and I'm incredibly blown away by your storytelling and your success. My favorite book was The Short But Strong Pirate King because the ending was such a surprise. What you're doing there is you're establishing that you've spent time researching this person and you're using sincere flattery. You're showing that you've given your time to them already, which makes it easier for them to feel comfortable about giving you their time, right? Because you've already made this investment in learning about them. Then your ask, "I'm writing you today because I'd love to learn more about how you got your start as a writer. It's long been a dream of mine and I'm finally beginning to explore it more seriously." So that's you, you're starting your ask. You want to learn more about how to start as a writer. "Would you have 20 minutes to talk to me over the phone or over a cup of coffee sometime soon? I'm free anytime Monday afternoon or Friday morning for the next month and I can meet wherever's convenient to you." So you're making it easy. All Abby would have to do is check her calendar and pick a Monday or Friday and name a time and place, and that's it. It's a one email exchange. And then a simple close, you know, with more flattery. Either way, you've already inspired me. So this is an easy thing. It's short, it's clear, you establish connection and credibility, you make it easy to say yes. Here is another example. This is an old one, but I love it. Someone reached out to me a couple years ago. She said, "I subscribed to your newsletter for the series on finding your passion. I've been continually inspired and motivated by your messages." Awesome, flattery, I love it, it gets my attention. "I'd love to be able to connect with you here after reading your latest note on networking in A Real Housewife. I wrote a blog on Real Housewives." So she's showing that she knows my work. She really has been to my website. Then she said, "Since I don't have your email address, as the newsletter comes from a group, and mail was the best way to reach out and connect." So her ask is that she just wants to connect with me on LinkedIn. It's super easy to say yes. And her close is, "Thank you." That's it. So this is a super easy message. It's only a few sentences long, but it follows the same formula. So you're welcome to steal this formula and use it and adapt it to your own voice and your own style of writing. But I find that if you follow that formula, you'll get more yeses than nos. Not everyone's going to say yes, but you're going to greatly increase your chances of meeting up with the right people who will support you in your next career. All right. But what if you wrote down Oprah or Tina Fey or someone like that, someone who you're pretty sure you won't ever be able to have coffee with or not in the near term? I want to say that's okay. So what I want you to do is I want you to become a part of their world. Everyone who's a semi-public figure has public channels. They have Facebook, they have Twitter, they have LinkedIn. So follow them on LinkedIn, fan page them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter and read their blogs, go to their website, watch their stuff, and just become a part of their world that way. You don't have to have one-on-one personal connection with everyone to be inspired by them, to learn from them, and to help shift your career forwards. And here's why this is so important. When you see other people achieving something and making progress somewhere, it automatically opens up your world to opportunity and possibility. It makes you realize what you're capable of. And sometimes if you haven't, you know, if seeing is believing, right? And so sometimes you might have an idea, but if no one around you has done it, you have no idea how to make it happen for yourself and you give up. But if someone around you has done it, even if it's someone you don't know, all of a sudden that gives you hope. You know that this is possible. And it starts you down the path of getting facts and less fear and achieving what you really want to achieve. So here's my last story on this. I told you that I'm from the East Coast. I grew up in Vienna, Virginia, and lived in DC for a long time as a consultant. And when I started thinking about starting my own business as a coach, especially one that I knew I wanted a global business, you know, I've reached millions of people all over the world. And it's awesome. But when I first started talking about that to people in Washington, to my friends and family, and to just, you know, the greater community, I got a lot of, you know, confusion. I got a lot of what nows. I got a lot of online business. What? And people didn't really understand it, which is fine. DC is a specific industry, and this was 6 years ago as well. And you know, there just wasn't a lot there for me in terms of community. So I got online and I started finding people who were doing what I wanted to do. And most of them lived in California and a lot of them lived in San Francisco. And I realized I'd been wanting to leave DC for years. And by the way, if you're curious about my story, you can read about it on the Revolutionary Club. I go into detail there. But I'd been wanting to leave DC for years. And so I was looking for a new city to move to. And I moved to San Francisco, drove across country. I knew two people there and I just went for it because it was what I just wanted to walk my talk and go after the kind of life I wanted to live. And as soon as I got there, I started networking with people, and it was amazing because when I told people what I was up to in Washington, I got a lot of confusion. When I told people what I was up to in San Francisco, I got a lot of, oh yeah, I totally know 10 other people who are doing that. And have you thought about these other 5 things? And that's really cool. And here's 3 other things that can help you. And just by changing my environment and starting to change who I was associated with, the possibilities for what I could do in my business and what I could do with my career just exponentially grew. There was so much I didn't even know was possible until I surrounded myself with the right people. And I'm not sharing this to say that you need to move. You don't need to move because the internet is so powerful, but you do need to start to actively look for the right people. You do need to put yourself out there. Even if all you're doing is lurking, that's fine. Start to get out there and surround yourself with people who can change your perception of what is possible. So here is the bottom line, and then I want to get to questions. Bottom line, there are steps that you can start now to find your next career over the next 30 days. So first off, overcome your biology, fact trumps fear. Ask, how do you know anytime you feel fear or doubt or anytime someone else tells you you can't do something? Next, sign yourself up for whatever passion learning fits your modality of learning. And I want you to be honest. This is an investment that is worth making given how many years you're going to work, how many decades you're going to work, as well as how much time you're going to spend at work and how important it is to feel like why you're here on the planet is worth it. And then I want you to build the right community. So your next piece of action, your final piece of action, is to find that inspiring person. Just start with one. And either start following them on social media, or if it's someone you can connect with personally, do that. Have coffee. So have coffee with someone inspiring this month to get yourself started. These 3 steps, I know they seem small, but they're gonna have an immediate impact on what you think is possible and on your motivation. All right. So are you guys ready to find work you love? You ready to stop paying lip service to passion and start actually going after it? So what I'd like to invite you to do now is we covered a lot of information in a short amount of time. So I saw some questions. I couldn't get to some of them while I was talking, but now start to formulate your questions. And if you have questions for me, now is a great time. And I also want to cover one resource that I want you to check out now, if depending on your modality of learning. So I love the excitement in the chat, by the way. So if you need more help, you can check out Zero to Passion. So this is my book, Zero to Passion. You can find it at zerotopassion.com. It's for anyone who's stuck, drained, frustrated, bored, and beyond, ready for something more. It's a do-it-yourself program. There's different levels to it. So you can start immediately if this is your learning style. And if depending on how you learn, we cover different modalities. So there's a book or workbook, and then there's a video series with guided emails, plus the book and the workbook. And you're welcome to any of these levels. And one of the reasons I'm doing this is because I've been really shaken up by what's happened in the world between the hurricanes, the Vegas shooting, everything. And so I'm gonna be donating 10% of all proceeds from this program for the rest of the year to Global Giving, to their Disaster Relief Fund, which is a very highly ranked charity. I've done some research because I want my money to go to something that's gonna go straight to the people. You can still buy this program at any time, and the money for the rest of the year will go, 10% will go to Global Giving. So I just want to put that out there. No matter when you're doing it, your money is going to go not just for your career, but to help others as well. So zerotopassion.com, check it out. It is my best do-it-yourself program to help you take everything we did today, but in so much more detail and really uncover what your passion is. It's a program to help you figure it out. So let me take your questions. Okay, so taking the salary hit to change what you do is daunting, especially true if you've been working 20 years and worked your way up. Thoughts? So my first question to you is, how do you know you have to take a salary hit? So that's a You may, but I find many jobs these days, there's ways to make money that are unexpected, and or sometimes it's a false myth that you have to take a salary hit. So I can't tell you, don't know what field you're talking about or what industry, but first off, confirm multiple sources that you absolutely have to take a salary hit. Second, for those, there are some careers where you will take a salary hit. That absolutely is true. If you're a high paid consultant and you're going to go in and teach guitar to elementary school students, you're going to take a salary hit. But what I do find is that if you really enjoy your passion, that creates a lot more creativity and flexibility in your brain. And you'll often find ways to make additional streams of income on top of that. If all of your energy is going towards pasting a smile on your face and just trying not to hate your job all the time and break down, you don't have any energy to bring in extra money. But if you genuinely enjoy what you do and it's low paid, you can often come up with creative ways to make up the difference because you're being fueled from a place of passion. But again, check and make sure that you absolutely will be taking a pay cut, because I hear that excuse all the time. And many times when we do the work, it's not 100% true. So let me know if that answered your question. John says, does this apply only to going out on your own or changing jobs to a company or organization? John, I don't know exactly what you're asking. Can you reframe your question a little bit? I'm not sure what you're asking. Celia says, here's my question. I'm considering staying within my industry, but changing the role. How do I avoid being pigeonholed by my experience? So staying within my industry, but changing my role. How do I avoid being pigeonholed by my experience? That's a great question. So first off, it depends on if you're going to change companies. If you can change your role within your current company first, that's a great way to start, because they already know, like, and trust you. Often you can pick up extra tasks or do some company sponsored education or something else to begin to change the role within your current company. And then you can add that to your resume and start to build your network and connections and begin to look outside your company for jobs in the new role, but the same industry. The other thing to do is to name the elephant in the room. So what I mean by that is, if you know your experience doesn't match up, I would just name it and say, listen, I'm looking at this. So let's say you're going from managing to HR. So you say, you know, I'm used to managing teams of four. I'm looking at this HR role. I know my experience. If you're looking at my resume, you're not seeing HR experience, but let me tell you what my experience brings to the table. Let me tell you how it translates to HR experience. So you can also just name the elephant and overcome their questions or concerns by just showing how you're going to contribute immediately. So those are a couple of different paths to take. Let me know if that makes sense. Anne says, how can I leave a job where I hold the benefits for the family and jump to something I want to do on my own? And that's a great question. It's a pretty broad one. And so I'm assuming what you mean is you want to potentially start your own business. I think that's what you're asking, so I'm going to interpret it that way. So you're thinking about starting something where you wouldn't have benefits. So a couple things. When family is involved and you are either the primary breadwinner or the primary benefit giver, I know that's a big conversation. So the very first thing I want you to do is to sit down with your family and talk about how you might want roles to change and what your family priorities are going forward. So I think, and I've seen this more so with women than with men actually, that you kind of make an agreement early in your marriage or in your partnership that one of you is going to breadwin or you fall into it and you want to do something different, but you actually never talk to your partner about that in a way that you feel like a team. So I want you to sit down and have that honest conversation with your partner. Like, here's what I want to do. I realize I bring in the benefits. What ideas can we come up with where maybe you bring in the benefits or you get a part-time job, or what can we do here in the short term to research health benefits, or what risks are we willing to take? Can we have an honest conversation? So I'd start there, and then you can do some research on what options are available for you. If you can start something on the side, if you need to have a certain amount of money in the bank because you don't want it, you're not going to carry benefits for a while. There's a lot of different options here, and I don't want to give you too much more advice because it's so specific and tailored to what's going on in your situation, but I hope that gives you a little bit of a start. Morgan is a recent UVA grad, class of 2016. Awesome, congrats. Curry School person. Morgan says, I'm finding my lack of work experience is hindering my opportunities. What advice do you have for getting potential recruiters and hiring managers interested? Morgan, my first piece of advice is to network, always. the numbers on that are pretty clear. So you can, if you just apply for jobs, you have, if that's all you're doing, it's, you've got like an 8% chance. If you just network, you have a, over a 70% chance. And if you network and apply together, your chances go up. So I would start talking to your network and doing informational interviews and using the UVA alumni connections and the Curry School connections to get you talking to potential employers about what they're looking for, figure out a way for you to get hours or more experience, even if on a volunteer rate, to start to pad out your resume, and also just get a warm recommendation into a job, because it's different if you're applying and you're just a piece of paper and no one knows you. But if I say to someone, hey, I know Morgan, Morgan's new graduate from the Curry School, Morgan's amazing, doesn't have experience, but really, really awesome, I think we should give it a chance. That goes a long way, right? So start with your network, start building your network and doing informational interviews and everything that you can to grow that network, to get information and get opportunity that way. Mike, oh, I love this question. How much time should be allocated to networking through LinkedIn and grabbing coffee versus applying to jobs? So Mike, my say, I tell people 75% of time networking, 25% of time applying. That would be the how I would always advocate. The majority of your time should be spent networking. You should absolutely apply on LinkedIn. Don't stop doing that. But if it's 80% applying and very little time networking, that's gonna slow down your job search in most cases. Networking will be more efficient. It's harder, but it's more efficient. Through the process of figuring out your objective and goal and then working through the choices and decision, some ways in your experience to continually draw inspiration to stay engaged on that path. So, okay, so Sarab, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I think what you're asking is, how do you stay motivated while you're trying to figure all of this out because it is so tiring? So that's a great question. So the best, so a couple pieces of quick advice for you on that. First off, stay motivated by getting the right community around you. So truly with your network, I find that the right connection at the right moment is all you need sometimes to continually stay inspired and motivated and keep going forward. So whether that's friends, family, new friends, online friends, whatever it is, that would be the place where I'd start and help you stay engaged. So number one, absolutely networking. Number two is I'd allow yourself a little bit of downtime. So you know, guys, finding your passion is hard. We've just spent time talking about why it's hard. So allow yourself, if you're job searching, if you're finding your passion, both, to have some downtime and be like, you know what, Friday night, I'm just going to watch Netflix. I'm not going to worry about this. I'm not going to feel bad. You know, treat it a little bit like a job in that you don't work all the time. So give yourself periodic breaks, because sometimes you just need that in order to be able to make progress consistently. If you go in and you start going from zero to 100 on networking and job searching and everything else, you'll burn out quickly. So treat this like a marathon and not like a sprint, and allow yourself that downtime guilt-free to just check out of the passion search and check out of the job search, and make sure it's regular. You know, every you, whatever it is, maybe if you job search at night, you do it three nights a week. If you job search during the day, you take nights off, whatever it is, figure out a rhythm that works for you. So those would be the two things I'd recommend. Great. So did I get everyone's questions? Liz, did I miss anyone?
Christy, I think there was one that came in really early. One of the things that can be most satisfying about work is having a shared common focus and passion with your coworkers, feeling like together you are doing good. Is that right? Or is it all about me, or about finding a like-minded community?
I think finding your passion is not about you. I think finding your passion, the way I defined it, is your passion is who you are, and your job is how you express it in the world and how you have an impact on others. So your passion is not me. Your passion is, what am I here to do? Who am I meant to serve? And so that's where I want everyone to kind of start. That's what we talk about in Zero to Passion as well. And so it's definitely not me. But if you're miserable at work, you're not serving anyone. So it is okay to take some time out to focus on your own career and your own path forward, because doing that is a way to actually impact others in a greater way. And as to finding a like-minded community or working for a nonprofit, if that's what you want to do, that's great. I support that. But that is not the only way to have an impact on the world. You can run a for-profit company and still have an amazing impact and still be doing meaningful work. So I don't want people to feel like, you know, you have to be paid nothing and work for a company that's mission-focused just to make an impact. You don't. I think when we're all happier at work, the world is different. So whether that's, you know, making donuts for someone or and giving someone a little bite of sweetness in the morning, or whether that's, you know, saving babies, as long as you're happy and having an impact, I think it changes your whole energy and it changes that of the people around you. And that's work worth doing. So I hope that answered that question.
Thank you so much. The only other question from earlier was whether there were any additional books or classes that you might recommend. And now I see we have another new one in the chat room as well.
I always like to recommend Zero to Passion to start because it's simple and it's easy. So that would be the resource for that. I also, you know, recommend go to the Revolutionary Club. There's a whole page on passion over there and videos and other things as well that's free to start. There's a couple of people that I really disagree with the way they teach passion because I don't think it's helpful. So that's why there's certain big names I don't recommend. Hang on, let me keep thinking about it and let me answer Claire's question. If I go into a brand new industry, how much time should I allot myself to learn about the industry and see if it's right for me? Claire, that's a really tough question to answer because it really depends on you. I think it's great through informational interviews and through networking and attending conferences to be able to learn about an industry before you go into it. And that'll give you a flavor of if it's going to be a fit or not before you have to commit a huge amount of time to it. But that's honestly a question I don't feel I can answer because it really depends on you. If you've been in an industry for a couple of years and you're absolutely miserable, then I think you can move on. If you've been in an industry for a few months, I would ask yourself, you know, is it something specific? Is it my boss that I'm really hating? Is it my day-to-day tasks? What is it that's making me the most miserable? And try to get into it. And once you do that, you might figure out, well, wait, I think it's my boss. So let me try to change roles or change managers and see if that'll help. Or maybe it's a specific task or way that your workday is structured and you can see if you can change that. If you've done that and it's been a while longer and it doesn't seem like things are getting better, in that case, you can start to think about changing industries. I hope that answered your question. Whew. I realize we've gone a little bit over time. I hope that's okay.
Oh, Christy, thank you so much. It looks like that was the last question. So I think that's going to wrap things up for today. Christy, thank you so much for sharing this very helpful webinar with us. And thank you to our audience for spending time with us today. This concludes today's webinar. Christy, thank you again. And thank you to our audience. We hope you all have a great weekend.